I welcome to Outthink. I'm Lawrence Akers, clinical hypnotherapist, member of the LGBT community, and an advocate for mental health. And we're with Joey today. How are you doing, Joe?
Good. How everyone?
Now, Joe, you might remember, was in episodes 3 and 4, I think it was.
Yeah. Talking about disability.
Yeah, and how you led to recovery from there. Today, we're talking on a very different topic, though. We're going to be discussing a bit of a strange one. It's what happens when your friends turn on you, I think is the best way to phrase it. So you think that's the best way to phrase it?
Or when they disassociate or move on, or what's the word, ghost you?
Ghosting is a good term. And I was thinking about this topic the other day, thinking, why is this relevant to LGBT people? And I think one of the things that kept coming to my mind was the whole idea of how strong friendships are within the LGBT community.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was thinking, well, how is that different from people who are non-LGBT? And, of course, it's not. But for me, I always thought that, you know, you have your family, but I also think for a lot of LGBT community, their friends can often be viewed as their other family.
Mm-hmm.
And it's through the shared experiences of being LGBT that that family's kind of bonded. And so for when that happens, when you have close friends who kind of, who suddenly disappear on you, or who accuse you of being something that you're not, or who just turn for whatever reason, that kind of disappearance, that pain, it seems to be all the more great.
Mm. I mean, I've sort of put it into two categories. One is the category of people that you know from going out.
Yep.
So it's either the party friends, the friends that you drink with, the friends that you only see, you know, maybe once a week, but because of the intensity of seeing them once a week, you believe that they're friends.
Mm.
And then you've got the real friends, the people that you could call when you're in trouble. So, you know, when you talk about people disappearing or ghosting or, you know, vanishing from your radar, you know, if you did make a decision to leave the scene, it sort of makes sense that those people would sort of wean off. And then I guess it takes a lot of energy and effort to actually establish really solid friends, people that you can call when you need them. And, you know, in my experience, the people that I speak to regularly, the people that are always, you know, there, like there's a daily contact or a fortnightly contact or a monthly contact, but it's like, you know, when you see them and you feel like nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Well, when I think you see friends that are going to ask questions like, where have you been, or you haven't been there for me, and it becomes about them, then that's when I think problems can start occurring. And then that's when sometimes people can get, I mean, again, in my experience from being ill, sometimes people are being really upset with the fact that I've been ill. And so when they go to ask me, where have you been and all that, it's sort of like they don't understand that I've been away because I've been sick.
Yeah.
And so then in some of those circumstances, I guess those people have vanished.
Yeah.
Or in some of the circumstances, we've had to work really hard to try and reestablish the newer boundaries, where, like, you know, I'm not going out as often, or the old me who used to go out and drink is now become the new me, which is in health mode and recovery mode.
Mm.
And so, I don't know, sometimes, I mean, I don't know what you may think, but I think sometimes people just aren't ready for that. Absolutely. Or they're not prepared for that. So they decide to walk away.
I consider any relationship, whether it be your family or your friend or your partner, as potentially sometimes being two roads that align, sometimes they intersect, and sometimes they veer off into different directions. You know, I think the art of keeping a relationship going is about how do you keep those roads aligned as closely as possible. And I think it's the same with friendships, except, you know, you don't obviously have that relationship bond there to necessarily tie you together.
Mm.
You'll find that there are moments where the friendships veer off and then they come back. I mean, you and I are a great example of that. We met
in
20-something years ago.
90-something.
Doing a shared project together. And we were never not friends. We'd always say hello if we saw each other out. But we weren't necessarily close in each other's lives. And now our roads have kind of come back again.
Mm.
And in many ways, almost crossed over as well.
Mm.
So, you know, I think that's,
I call that, so that's like a long-term, well, it's like a long-term friendship, but I also put that down to, and I don't want to, you know, I want the audience to think that it's a judgment statement I'm going to make, but I really think that it's a maturity thing.
Mm.
You know, like when you're sort of comfortable with who you are, then you can be friends with people and know that there are boundaries in the friendships, and the friendships are consistent, meaning that you know that you've got the other person's back. But when, you know, when there's not, the maturity is lacking, then that's when sometimes the issues may occur. I also believe that social media has changed the way that we view friendships. Like, when I was ill for like the first year, I wasn't really going doing much at all, but I had this illusion that I had all these friends because it was virtual.
Yeah.
You know, the people that were, you know, commenting and, you know, sending me all their love, but there was no actual, they weren't physically seeing me.
Isn't it really funny as well, though, that when people defriend you on Facebook, it's almost like the definitive end to a friendship now.
Yeah.
Which I find really amusing. And, you know, some people defriend you because they're cleaning up their friends list or whatever. But I think for a lot of people who are so invested in social media, that whole thing of, you know, we're no longer friends, I'm going to defriend you.
Well, that happened. That was something I experienced actually on the weekend, where a friend of mine that I didn't know had defriended me, I saw him commenting on another friend's, we both commented on a friend's status update, and then I went into the friends page and we weren't friends. And I'm thinking, what have I done?
It's the immediate reaction.
But then I just thought, well, you know, it's like anything, people move, people change, people have different, different, you know, pathways.
Exactly. And I also think, you know, especially on social media, it's a platform, if used correctly, to really offer up a version of yourself. And some people just might not get into it.
Mm.
As simple as that. It doesn't mean you're a good or a bad person by any means. It just simply means that some people go, you know, I don't want to see cat memes and politics and all that sort of thing. And that's absolutely fine as well.
Mm. Do you think that also there's a sensitivity in there, where sometimes people get really sensitive with content or with, you know, or with behaviours? So, for example, if someone becomes, again, I just based on my own experience, so when I became more a therapist, when I became more an advocate for positive thinking, when I became a, you know, person that would post a lot of stuff about mental health, I noticed that some people, and some people are really quite honest, which I respect, you know, Joey, I really love what you're doing, but I can't, you know, I can't follow you anymore because it's too much. So, again, sometimes the behavioural thing, where if you're in a group of, you know, friends online or even in real life and they're doing the same thing, like they're talking about, say, sex a lot, or they're talking about going out to the bars, or they're talking about travelling to, you know, Pride all around Europe, then that there's a consistency there. But then if people have changed from that and they're talking about other things, then, you know, that sort of gap happens.
Maybe that's a great metaphor for life, though, in the sense that if we were to solely walk around and talk about mental health issues all the time, then it would drive our friends crazy. I caught up with a friend on Saturday night who's had a really challenging year, and, you know, it was great to catch up with him. And one of the things I promised him when I saw him was, I'm not going to counsel you, right? I'm not going to counsel you. I just want to be, you know,
you can't help it, can you?
No, I can. That's the thing. One of my strengths is I can. But, so, you know, if you want to talk about it, that's cool. But if you want to just have a drinking buddy, that's cool as well.
You know? But, again, I sort of see it now that I quite enjoy having people in my – it's taken me a while to sort of get the group that I really like. I like actually meeting people that are like-minded and people that are in my life that talk about similar stuff. Yes, we have different topics. Yes, we can have fun. But they're like-minded. So we understand that the topics are always, like, a bit richer.
It's a shared commonality.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I look back at the past, I had some really awesome friends, but some of them were sun chasers. And I'd call them sun chasers because all they really wanted to do was just, it was always sunny.
Yeah.
When there was darkness or emotion or a depressed conversation, they would normally either complain or they flee or they wouldn't know how to handle it. So now I'm finding that most of my friends, you know, I'm older and I am working in a different industry, those friends now can cope.
Well, we do have things happen in our lives inevitably that are challenging and difficult, whether it be, you know, ill health or grief or all those situations that don't bring out the best in us. And we do have those friends that don't handle those sort of situations well, in terms of, you know, it's like when, you know, someone dies and you have those friends that may not know what to say around you.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of understand why some people might flee. I absolutely do get it. I tend to wonder, you know, is it our responsibility sometimes to say, look, if you don't know what to say around me, that's absolutely fine? Or, you know, what's your thoughts there?
Well, I think it's, again, from my experience from being sick, it's difficult when you're vulnerable and you need people around you. Mm. You really need them. And so when people didn't come or they didn't actually connect, I found that it was very difficult to actually ask because I don't think I should ask. So I sort of expressed some of the way I was feeling maybe a bit more globally through a status update,
mm-hmm.
you know, feeling vulnerable right now. Or I remember I sent a status update at Christmas time saying I'm feeling really lonely. If you've got time, can you send me a Christmas cards?
Yeah.
And that was amazing because I received like hundreds of Christmas cards through that. But I also think that there is different levels of what you think. Mm. So what I mean by that is, you know, I can meet someone through you, for example, and we can have a really good afternoon, say, at your party, and, you know, we can exchange numbers. And that person could leave that going, oh, look, I've made a new friend. Well, I could sort of leave thinking I've made an acquaintance.
Yeah.
And so there's sometimes that can happen where there's a miscommunication of what people expect. Mm. And I think that's a problem when expectations come into it. You know, I expect you to be there because you're my friend. When in reality, expectations lead to disappointment. And that's probably one of the biggest things I've learned while I've been sick, mm. is that the only person I could really depend on is myself. And the only thing I could really depend on is asking. So rather than expecting people to call me and say, hey, Joe, how are you?
Yeah.
I just had to learn to ask. Like, yeah. you know, if you're not doing anything, can you, you know, check up on me? Or if you're not doing anything this weekend, can you come visit me? And that made it a lot easier for me not to take it personally or to get upset or to get sensitive about the people that were just vanishing.
So I've got a opposite kind of situation in the sense that I have a wonderful friend in the US who has been, again, experiencing some really challenging past few months. He suffers from MS, which adds to the complication. And, you know, living in America at the moment is a very frightening situation for, you know, LGBT community as it is generally. And he messaged me over the weekend to say, I'm so sorry I disappeared. You know, I've had stuff on. I've needed to sort it out. I just needed to have my own space. And, you know, my response to him was along the lines of, you know, friends don't need to apologize. You know, it doesn't matter if it's one day or 6 months. It's about the quality, you know, and if you need support, I'm here. But, you know, maybe sometimes when people do disappear and we take it personally, we may not realize that, you know, they've got their own stuff going on as well.
Yeah, and that's where I think it's important to ask. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a really good point that you brought up because I recall, again, when at the beginning of my illness, I sent out a message, an email to some of my really close friends,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, explaining to them that I'm not going to be able to do certain things, that this is what makes me tired. And so it was sort of, there was communication there, and most people understood.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the point that you're raising is that we need to just ask. Yeah. And I think we're scared to ask. You know, hey, Lawrence, have I upset you? Is mm-hmm. there something wrong? You know, I think people are maybe uncomfortable to hear the truth or they think that it's not protocol.
Well, this is the interesting thing. This leads to another point again. What about, and this is something that's happened to me in recent times as well. I'm not as dramatic as this, folks, I promise. What about when you have friends who accuse you of being something that you're not or paint you out to be this, you know, nasty person that you're not?
So are they making an assumption?
Yeah, or to have withheld information that you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those sort of situations where they think the worst of you and after you've asked, cease the friendship there. You know, what do you do? And my decision on that was you've just got to let it go, because if you can, you know, sit with yourself knowing that you have honestly not done anything wrong and that unfortunately it's this person's issue, how are you going to change that person's mind when they've made up their mind? You just can't. And so you can still love them. You can still wish them the best. You can still enjoy the past memories. But there's a part of you that has to learn to go, this is not my issue. I need to let go.
Mm.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Yeah.
That's, that came out wrong. Not my monkeys, not my circus.
I think it goes back to the control, that main issue of control, is that you can't control what other people do or say. You can only control your response, which, like you said, you wish them well and you sort of care for them. But I go back to the assumption thing, is that I think the important, one of the most important things is to not take things personally and just to learn to ask.
Well, it's not our issue, it's their issue.
Sometimes things are, you know, there's been numerous times in my, you know, my younger gay years that I was accused of sleeping with boyfriends and people that, you know, men that other men had liked and all that.
Mm.
And, you know, this is where I got myself in trouble because I sort of feel like I connect with people, but people misinterpret that as flirting.
Mm.
So then people can make assumptions about you and assume that you're one way or another way. And then, you know, you can't control what people say.
The reality is you can't change that in any way. Like, I mean, we're talking about how we behave naturally, instinctively.
Yeah.
And how other people wish to interpret it based on whatever their beliefs are.
Well, I think that's a big thing in the gay world.
Mm.
You know, like, I think that we see some things like, you know, we either see, you know, a really muscly person who's out there having fun and, you know, so we can automatically sometimes assume that they're a drug user or you assume that they're, you know, a heist, you know, they used to have a lot of sex. Well, in reality, they could be shy and they could just be projecting that shyness on the podium, for example. Mm. Or we get people that are really, really shy and really, really quiet. And, you know, at the end of the day, but behind closed doors, they're really animalistic sex fiends.
Yeah.
You know, so, well, that's not a good word, is it, fiends? But sex, you know, connoisseurs. So it's, we always, you know, I think that it's something that we do in general in society, but I think in the gay world, we're in this micro world, and so it's easier to pigeonhole people and to sort of, you know, and I remember when, you know, in the 90s when HIV first came out and it was coming out and it was like, you know, it was hitting the scene and people would say, oh, he's got that. And so there was this and them sort of mentality and so on, and people would only be friends with this person and not that person and all that sort of stuff because of image and because of what they presume to be correct. And I think that's just now, you know, progressed. I think you did a podcast on slut shaming. Was that one of your topics that you're going to do maybe?
I think it's one that we've got coming up. I think we've touched on it in the past.
Yeah.
Appropriately.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things is that, you know, for example, I've got, you know, some friends that are wealthy and some friends that, you know, don't go out and some friends that are monogamous and then the way that they look at other people and that, oh, we can't be friends with them. Well, like, why, you know, that sort of stuff happens. Well, for me personally, I'm open to anyone.
I've got to say, I feel the term slut shaming is, it's frustrating and confronting as it is anyway. You know, I don't sit there in judgment of anyone's sexual activity or exploration. And it tends to make me wonder what is the issue for people with sluts?
I think the issue is, it's just going back to the topic of like why people don't stay friends. The issue is that they're not like.
Yeah.
It's the like
against it's the likeness.
Yeah. So we were talking before about, you know,
come to Facebook as well.
Yeah.
Likes.
You know, we hang out and we hang out with other therapists and we talk and we like that.
Yeah.
We love those conversations. Well, if you get into a room of musos, you're going to like talking about music because you've got that like. So I think that sometimes people who have not experienced that promiscuous lifestyle or maybe not gone out or maybe I've got some friends who've been in relationships from a really young age and they didn't experience maybe what another gay or lesbian may have experienced, there's that misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And so, again, is a projection. It could be, you know, rather than looking at themselves and maybe figuring out I'm insecure here or, like, you know, I want to try that, you know, they'd rather label that.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, it's so interesting. Like, a number of times people would abuse someone for being promiscuous, but then you find that they go to beats.
Mm.
And you're thinking, well, isn't that the same thing?
Isn't the same thing. But to them it's not. They're justified in their own mind as to how this is different. But I think at some level they do recognise that, or else they wouldn't be indulging in that behaviour.
Yeah. So what do you think then is a healthy solution for when you do get ghosted or when you do get dumped?
Look, I think it comes back to what I was saying before. It has to be a combination of acceptance and the ability to let it go. You know, to accept that many friendships have a start and end.
Mm-hmm.
All things in life have a start and end. To, I guess, look at have we done anything within that situation to upset and offend that person? And do we feel the need to apologise mm-hmm. for that, to clear our conscience? And if we haven't, to accept that it isn't actually our issue.
Mm-hmm.
We're obviously triggering something in the other person's belief system, whether it's around trust or whether it's around being vulnerable or, you know, whatever the issue is, you know, there's obviously some trigger that our way of being does in the other person. Mm.
I think also we need to consider in there the fact that the information may not necessarily be also accurate.
Mm.
You know, like, you know, and in regards to the trust and, you know, we've also got to consider how far do we go. Like, in one of my examples, I had a friend who, you know, discovered ice. Mm. And so then, you know, the friendship that we had sort of changed because he didn't want to hang out with someone that doesn't use ice. Mm. Like, you know, so it was going from that to, I guess, a different lifestyle thing. And so, you know, I was continually trying to, you know, can we catch up? Well, you know, what can we
but
do?
But that's the acceptance also that the paths are gone now. The paths are gone two different ways.
And I guess you can use that with any example, though. Like, you know, sometimes, you know, I've had friends who have gone out, we've gone out and they've met a new group.
Yeah.
And I didn't gel with that group. And then that path.
And then they did. And yeah. Again, it's simply down to.
So you got to know when to stop.
Yeah.
You know, if it's like, I like what you said earlier about if it's a normal, natural relationship, then it could sustain those changes.
Mm.
And I've got some good friends that I've got done that with. But then there's other times when the separation is too hard and people can't sustain that.
Yeah.
You know, we were talking about this on the weekend as well. I was wondering how do people, you know, when you go out or you see friends, I think you know, you've got these in your own life, is that there are people that have got friends for like years.
Mm.
And it's like this sort of continual family where it's the same people. Well, then there are other people that have got, you know, I'm more a one-on-one person. And so I've got these little pockets, right? Well, other people have got one group.
Mm.
So I find that interesting how, again, dynamic comes into it. You know, do you have this one group? Oh, look, you know, we met when we first came out and like 30 years later, we're still hanging out. We're still doing stuff. We still go our own ways every now and then, but there's a solid core. Like, you know, like Christmas, for example, they might have Christmas lunch together or they celebrate birthdays quite intently. Well,
I do have friends that I've had for decades.
Yeah.
I don't think I can necessarily say that there is a set group that I necessarily hang around with all the time.
Maybe your partner is that group.
Well, yeah, definitely Ant would fall into that. I think the strange way that I look at it is that I don't look at myself as being part of a group, but I do see myself as being an individual unit that fits into.
Yeah, but do you understand how some people do have that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I've got friends who only tend to identify they are via relationships and who they are in relation to. And I think the idea of not having that completely terrifies them.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we were talking about, like how, you know, does that happen, even though there may be underlying, you know, hatred or, like, discomfort, but they still stay there.
Isn't that down, though, to the that human need to belong to a tribe and to have connection.
Yeah, like the whole Maslow community connection.
Yeah, absolutely. Basic needs. You know, it's all about feeling connected to people, feeling that you belong.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, comes back to shame. Mm. Again, you know, people don't want to feel unlovable. They don't want to feel
isolated.
They don't want to feel like they're not a likable person.
Mm.
And so when you do have these instances where people confront that and challenge that, it really triggers that shame message that suggests maybe I'm not a likable person.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to bring something else up that's sort of on topic, but changing it a little bit, is that, again, do you think that as we get older, it's harder to get involved or get connected to a group or to make friends? Like, I've just recently made a new friend, you know, Bruce, and you've met Bruce, and, you know, it's been really lovely to actually, but it's been so long since I've met a new friend at that level. So I'm thinking, is it when we get older that we set in our ways and we know what we want and there's an expectation, again, of people fitting into what we need? And so, you know, well, when you're younger, you can go to Three Faces on the market, and that's showing how old we are. You know, it's that you can go to those places, and I remember meeting people or sleeping with people, and then we're best friends, you know? And, you know, again, that's another thing that we need to be mindful of, is that a lot of times in the gay world, that a lot of the friendships are established through sex and connection that way.
Absolutely.
You know, and is it happening now? So,
well, before we go down that route, unintended, it should be noted, I'm pretty sure there was research done that shows that as you get older, your circle of friends gets smaller.
Right.
And you do only tend to have a need for a smaller circle of friends. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I think it comes back to that likes thing.
Mm-hmm.
As you get older, your likes change, your needs change, your environments and circumstances change, and you're likely to connect with new people as you go. But I think the need to have a big group of people diminishes, and it's more about having a handful of, of good friends. And speaking of handful, gay men meeting through sex. Yes, I do think that for a lot of people that has happened because, you know.
But I'm talking about age here as well. Like, you know, I mean, maybe this is where we don't agree, is that I think that when you're older, it may just be harder. And maybe because I am older and I'm just basing it on my own experiences.
Wouldn't that depend on what you do, where you go and what
activity? Well, that's the thing, yeah. So if I've chosen to not, you know, I don't go out as much. So I'm obviously not meeting as many, you know, people. And so it means my world's got smaller, which goes back to your point that when, you know, for me, my close friends are really tight now.
Yep.
Well, you know, even just a few years ago before I was ill and I was going out more, my worlds were more like, you know, they were orbiting. You know, I had this group here, that group there. Well, now I seem to...
This is kind of my world, yeah.
Yeah, so it all depends on circumstance. But thinking back, I know that when I was younger, it was quite easy for me to walk into a room and leave with, you know, 100, you know, new friends. Because, you know, you can get drunk, you can dance with them, you can connect. Yeah. And, excuse me, you always have next week. You know, so there's an automatic, you know, reconnection, isn't there? Yeah. Oh, you know, are you going to come back next week? Yes, I'll see you Friday.
There are countless people who I don't know the name of, but I know the face of and would nod and say hello to if I saw. I think that it comes back to that original point you made about, you know, two types of friends. There's the acquaintance that you will be polite to and talk to and see and maybe know the name of. And then there's the ones that are your really close friends who you're more likely to be open and vulnerable to and to share life experiences with and to, you know, feel that greater connection.
Mm. I mean, that could be in a topic in itself, couldn't it? Like, you know, if you had a dance floor full of people or a room in a bar for people, like, what is it that makes certain people connect with you and other people that you just can say hello and move away from? You know, is it an energy? Is it conversation? Is it topics? Is it, like, you
it
know,
any so, number of so things? Yeah, it could be circumstances even.
Yeah, but I find it fascinating.
You know, a shout out here to Skye Brooks, you know, legendary drag performer. When Skye was performing, she and I never really spoke. But in, you know, the years after that, she and I developed a really great friendship. And I remember sitting at a bar with her one night and she said, why do we never talk like this when, you know, we first met each other? And it's like, I just don't think the circumstances allowed it to happen. You know, I tend to wonder how many people out there have, you know, said a fleeting hello to what could have been their next great close friend because the circumstance just didn't allow for those people to explore each other more, to open up and be vulnerable. That stumped you, didn't it?
No, I'm just thinking. Yeah. I'm just thinking it's true. Yeah, like I'm thinking of, like, you know, being a barman, and I know you were both done bar work, and like, you know, that was really difficult. There was a lot of, you know, misconception that, you know, you serve a drink to someone and you see them regularly that people call you a friend.
Yeah.
And, you know, but when you knock off and they want, you know, don't have a drink and you're like sort of, your friends are waiting over there for you, it's uncomfortable, but it's also interesting how people do see different people in different ways, especially like when you work in those sort of environments or when you're given superficial connection to people. Like, I always find it fascinating when someone is connected to like a YouTuber or a star, and I don't know them, but they feel like they know them.
Yeah, they feel like they know. It's like when, you know, last year we had many great artists leave us, you know, starting with David Bowie and
George Michael,
you know, George Michael and Prince and Pete Burns and, you know, again, you know, for me, David Bowie was a big one. And when the news hit, my partner was in bed and he walked out of the bedroom to go to the bathroom to see me sitting there crying. And he said, what's wrong? And I said, David Bowie's died. And I think he looked at me a bit crazy, like, who cares? But for me, I felt so connected with this guy's work that I felt like I knew him. I felt like there was a part of me. And I guess also because we grow up listening to their music and we associate our own memories and our own connections to it. So in many ways, when he passed, there's a part of me that felt like I'd gone with it.
Mm.
Which is silly because, of course...
No, I didn't think of that. I mean, like, that's, you know, that's a big one, isn't it? Like, especially when you're going through an emotional, you know, change or turmoil or whatever, you or trauma, you know, you can have, you know, I remember listening to Keen through, you know, when I had a breakup, I listened to the Keen album about a billion times. Yep. It was on repeat. And to the point where every time I'd see them, I felt like I knew them. Yep. And so it was just,
And then, that becomes an anchor after a while.
And then once I got stronger, I didn't need them, so I was dumping them.
You dumped Keen.
Yeah, I dumped Keen.
That should be the title of this podcast, How Joey Dumped Keen. So I think, you know, I guess if we, because we could talk about this for ages, but I guess we'll try to wrap up here what the key themes have been. We've covered a lot of points. Really, it's about being able to learn how to accept, being able to learn how to ask and to be authentic with people. And if it's a situation which is just outside of our control to fix, being able to learn how to let it go.
Mm.
And to go, you know, thank you, we had some great times, but, you know.
Yeah, just being comfortable with not getting angry or projecting.
Yeah.
You're not taking things personally.
It'd, like, it'd be very easy to take it.
Because at the same time, sometimes you're not going to get the answers. Yeah. You know, sometimes people aren't going to say to you, I don't like you.
We need to just realise that, yeah, there's a fear of rejection. And for many people, that is a very great fear.
Yeah.
You know, I think the other fear that people have is a fear of lack of control. And so this topic really hits both those points really hard.
Mm.
So being able to recognise that we can't control everything, we're not going to be liked by everybody. And that's okay.
Yeah. Good topic.
Yeah. Look, thanks everyone for watching. And yeah, we look forward to seeing you at the next podcast. Until then, take care.
Bye, everyone.